I call it the CPI index. It's looking at three different ranking people in three different areas, whether they're C is capacity, P is philanthropy, are they philanthropic, and I is interest. So if they have the capacity to make a gift, it's obviously one of the things that you need when you're trying to figure out how much to ask for someone. Then are they generous? Do they give to other causes? And then better yet, do they give to causes like yours? And then third, are they interested in specifically your cause? The great thing is you really can't impact anybody's capacity. You can't make it so that they're richer or more wealthy. And you can't really impact somebody's philanthropy, philanthropic tendencies, because that's usually something that was the upbringing. Some people are generous and some people aren't. And it's not a good or bad thing, but it's just a fact. And you could just bore yourself to tears trying to ask someone who's not generous to make a gift. It's not worth your time. But the interest level is the one that you can impact, and that's the exciting part to me. That once you know your story and once you know what your distinctions are, you can take someone who ranks higher in the capacity in the philanthropic areas, and then you can start engaging them, the second step in my process, and start telling them your story and seeing what interests them. For the CPI, I would take it to your board, list a whole bunch of prospects down, have them brainstorm more prospects, and then have three columns with labeled CPI and have them rated on a scale of 1 to 5. And the people that are 12 or above are probably the people you want to be talking to first about your organization. So if we move into the engage, though, this all takes a lot of work. That's the thing that I think surprises a lot of people when I describe this to them. When you start, the worst thing to do is make a request when you have no clue if it's too much that you're asking for. You obviously don't want to under-ask, and I've never had, even with that $100,000 ask that it was a no, she was not offended that I asked for a six-figure gift, even though she'd never given that before. People tend to be flattered that you think that they could give that much. But the engagement process is one I think nonprofits could really increase, where it's donor cultivation. You have a suspect, and you make them a prospect by getting to know them, finding out what they're interested in by talking with them. Fundraisers are often like people that go from meeting a person to asking them to marry them without having any dating in between. That in relationships that wouldn't work, and it doesn't work in finances either. You need to get to know the person. That person, the prospective donor, needs to know that you care about them as a person, not just as a source of cash. And then you may find out in this process that your cause isn't the right cause for them. And because of your contacts in the nonprofit field, you may be able to say, have you considered this other organization? They seem to line up with your values and what you're interested in, which only ingratiates you more to this person who is, potentially has the capacity and is generous, because that's one of the reasons why you've chosen to talk to them.
And hopefully they can refer you to someone else.
Very true.
Yeah.
Because they may know people that, you know, this isn't the cause for me, but why don't you talk to these people and tell them I told you to call. Which is a lot better introduction than just calling cold. I don't like cold calling.
No,
that's a really good point. So there's another way to do prospect rating is just to, instead of the CPI thing, is just to ask people, tell me, you know, what do you know about these people and how much should I ask? What would be an appropriate amount for us to ask? And there are people that feel very comfortable labeling names. It's almost like they're spending other people's money, so that you got to take it with a grain of salt. But Those are some ways that you can figure out how much might be the appropriate request.
Now, once you move from the research to the engage, I think a lot of people have trouble with that first contact. If it's somebody you don't know already, maybe in a social setting, how do you go about that conversation? Because I feel like if I were to call someone and say I'm with XYZ organization, I have to say a reason why I'm calling. How do you start that process without, you know, with showing them what your reason is for calling or getting to know them, but not hitting them up for $100,000 right off the bat?
Great question. And what that sparked in me is one other thing that's vital when you're just – I need to put an addendum to the last question. When you're figuring out how much to ask somebody for, it's not enough to figure out how much you can ask them for. You need to also anchor that in ways that's going to impact your organization. How much are you trying to raise, and how many donors do you need at different levels? And there's a thing called the donor pyramid, where I think the website at campaign.com, C-A-M-P-A-G-N-E.com, I think, in the nonprofit library. They have a gift range calculator that you can figure out for the total that you're trying to raise, how many gifts you need at different levels. Because one of the mistakes a lot of nonprofit people make is if they have to raise $100,000, they're just going to find 1,000 people that can give $100, and then they've got it. People don't tend to give that way. So if you can sit with a donor and say, "This, we're looking for 5 gifts at the $25,000 level. Is that something that, you know, do you see yourself there?" That anchors it back to the organization. So, which is also helps you in finding new contacts. I think your primary source for new contacts, as the chief fundraising person, whether you're the executive director, development director, whatever, you're going to have to get out and meet people. I think one of the mistakes that I'm even finding myself here at Inland Hospital making the mistake of is sitting behind my desk too much. And I'm part of Rotary. I'm part of the chamber. I go on nature walks. Or we have a small community here, so their community is pretty involved in different things. And you start getting to know people. I was just advised yesterday that in a smaller community like mine, it would be advisable for me, especially with my years of fundraising experience, to participate on a board in the area as a way of giving back to the community. The benefit of that is it'll also help me see who else is philanthropic and develop relationships in a way that isn't directly linked with the cause that I'm creating, that I'm fundraising for, but will help me rub shoulders with people as a peer, and then it will establish relationships that will benefit what I'm doing here also. But the primary reason for that would be to give back to the community as a new member here. Getting out is a big thing. The other way, which to me is obvious, but I know isn't obvious, is being introduced by your board members. I've had a number of people that have been able to. The board members know are considered peers. They've earned the respect in other people's eyes, and so when my board chair says, "Hey, let's get together and meet so and so," there's a whole different level of belief, and you don't have to go through a lot of the preliminary sizing up that you have to go through if you're just meeting somebody for the first time.
Mm-hmm. So just in a casual way, for example, going to lunch with them or participating in some of the same organizations they do?
Right. There's all sorts of different, and it depends on your comfort level. Extroverts are obviously going to do things a little bit different than introverts. But I would imagine that going to lunch with somebody, particularly to talk specifically about the organization, might be a little bit too forward.
Okay.
For some relationships. You'd want to do something in a group or talk about just fundraising in the community. If you're new in the community or new in the nonprofit or new in fundraising, you can, if you're new at anything, basically you could use it as an excuse of doing some internal research and just love your perceptions on this and could we go, you know, get together for a cup of coffee. Now, all of that is time intensive and not very efficient. It's effective because my bias is to cultivating and stewarding major donors because that's where there's tremendous payoff and planned giving. I don't know much about the mechanics of planned giving, but I know enough to ask people to consider and talk to their advising team, which is a service that I think we have in the nonprofit world. 70% of at least in North America, 70% of the people die without a will. So, but also other ways to make new contacts, which are time-honored and time-tested and expensive, or direct mail, doing an acquisition mailing to a certain group. But you need to be careful when you do that because it has to be a message that's finely honed for as best as you can tell, the people that you're mailing to. I know as a member of a chamber, I've gotten a number of things from nonprofits that are sort of like these Hail Mary letters all about me. It was all about them, the nonprofit, nothing about what was in it for me for giving. How was I investing in the community? What lives was I transforming? I could care less about that nonprofit. And it was very interesting to be on the receiving end of those. I'm sure they get some new gifts from that, but it's a hard way to make new contacts.
It definitely is, and from what I've read, a lot of acquisition mailings barely break even.
Right.
Even if it's a good letter. So
if you start factoring in staff time and
mm-hmm.
salary, then that makes it even worse.
Right.
Yeah. Where the people that one of the things that I've developed that is the terms that I like is donor evangelist. If you have people that are evangelizing your cause and so excited about what you're doing that are drawing people into your database, sort of like the base of a fire sucks in the oxygen to keep feeding it, that ideally is where you want to get to, is where you're giving donors such an incredible experience with participating with your organization, however you craft that experience, that they want to introduce their friends to. So ideally, that's the goal to shoot for. That's sort of like the nirvana for nonprofits.
And is that a long-term process to develop those donor evangelists?
I would err on saying that. I don't think it's a quick-fix solution, but I'm surprised with what causes attract different people.
Mm-hmm.
And the cause is different, but you notice I use the word cause a lot because part of what grabs people's attention is, Jim Collins and his co-author in the book called Built to Last talked about BHAGs, Big, Hairy, Audacious Goals. You have some goal that's you're gonna try to change the world with. That turns people's heads. If you're just kind of doing business as usual and you always have done your work this way, and if you have this mentality that you have a right to people giving,
mm-hmm.
because your cause is so, it's just self-evident. It's obviously that important because you get it. So why isn't anyone else? That's usually not going to attract people to be wildly enthusiastic about what you're doing.
Right. It has the opposite effect.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay, and let's see. Whenever someone is raising money, just in a general way, I did have a good question that came in from one of my subscribers, and I really liked the way she put it, talking about how you talk to potential donors and how you ask them for donations, whether it be in person or in writing. And she said, how do I get my request for donations and help across in a way that doesn't make me feel like I'm nagging, begging, or whining?
Mm.
It seems like sometimes people are afraid to ask because they don't want to impose, maybe. They don't want to nag or beg for money.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I just got through with a lunch with somebody that we solicited months ago and still hasn't come in with a pledge for a campaign, and I've been putting off recontacting him because I didn't want to nag.
Mm-hmm.
The way I did it in this case was I just said, I understand that the solicitation experience wasn't the best, and that concerns me because I want to make sure that our donors and people that we're inviting to give have a great experience with the organization. Can we get together and talk about that? And in the course of talking about that, we obviously talked about his pledge, and he's going to get an interview by next Wednesday. But I think to get directly to the question that your subscriber asked, it's excellently worded too. Part of it is if you've done the research and done the engaging, which is as much listening as it is talking, it's even more listening, you'll know what drives and motivates the donor to an extent, to the best of your knowledge, because you don't want to forever get stuck in analysis without asking. If you don't ask for money, people aren't going to give. That's the number one reason people don't give, is that they're not asked. But if you also, there's one thing that has saved me a lot of upset stomachs for myself internally anyway, is that when I make the ask, I then say, and you make the ask, you shut up because you need to let the other person respond to the ask. And then you say, thank you so much, here are the materials, whatever. Could I call you by next Friday if I haven't heard from you by then? Is that all right? I've never had anybody say, oh, no. Usually, if they do, that's offering another date. It's not, don't call me, I'll call you. But it gives you the open door to go back in on next Friday and say, hey, Susie, just checking in about our meeting last week and talking about your commitment to the campaign. Have you had a chance to see if things are going to work out? And you can do that in an email just as inoffensively. Have you made sure things would work out, that the amount, or have you come up, wanted to see where you're at with that? Is there anything, if there's anything I can do to help, let me know. I'm pleased that your subscribers, again, for the wording with the whole nagging, begging, or whining, because as long as she's aware that may be how it's coming across, she's probably in a safe space, because if she forgets that, then she may be more in danger of doing it.
That's a good point, that you should be aware of how you're coming across. And I love the way that you talked about how to close that conversation. It's very open, and it's neither begging or it's neither demanding. You say, can I just call you back and here's some information, and
It's the most natural thing in the world. We've been doing that. It's fun, too, if you have volunteers in there with the solicitation, maybe a door opener who introduced you to this person. You can, and then after the prospect leaves, you can say, do you see what I did? Not only did I ask a specific dollar amount in the meeting, which I think is vital, but did you notice how I just very naturally just said, hey, is it all right if I follow up with you next Friday? And they're all, oh, and it's fascinating to see how naturally it flows after you've practiced it a few times, that the people that are volunteering with you didn't even catch it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you point it out, then it becomes something that you can be educating your board and your volunteers on, too.
That's a great point, too, to bring along a volunteer or a board member and let them see how that works and see how natural it is.
What we've done for the campaign I'm currently working on is we've created a position called Door Opener. There is a group, philanthropy is incredibly new here, and there's a lot of people that just aren't comfortable with it. And there's a lot of, you know, you'll always hear wherever you live in the United States, oh, there's a lot of campaigns going on in this community. They used to time themselves and start when the other one's finished, but now they're just all going at once. I've lived in three different states. I've heard the same excuse. But what we've done here to help address that is create a position called Door Opener. It's, and their job entirely is to open the door and then sit with us during the during whatever meeting or tour it is. They don't have to say anything. They just introduce us to the person that helps set up the appointment, and then they don't have to say anything for the rest of the visit. But the fact that they're in the room with us or with me speaks oodles to the person that we're talking to. It says, I'm behind this. I agree with this. And they don't have to. And once they've done it one time, they realize how easy it is because I do all the dirty work. What they think is they don't realize that I actually like doing this. I really like asking for money because it's such a joy seeing people give to causes that they're passionate about. It's there's something that's released in them. There's a freedom that comes in them, which is addicting to see. And so you just want to ask more people. One last, can I add one more thing though to the three different things that to avoid nagging, begging, and whining?
Yes.
Okay, so I've talked about the doing the research and doing the engagement process in particular, dating with your prospect, setting a date by just saying, hey, can I get back with you next Thursday? The last one, which has saved me so many times in fundraising, is an acronym I call PYITS, P-Y-I-T-S. Put yourself in their shoes. Do whatever you can to just before you send out that letter or make that phone call, just create a moment of space in your life and say, all right, what if I were receiving this? How would I feel? I didn't know anything about this organization. This was interrupting my day. How would it make me feel? And that can be that. There have been letter campaigns that we've stopped because we asked that question and we realized, whoa. This, it made sense to us in the office, but our world revolves around this nonprofit. Their world doesn't, nor should it. So let's craft it in a whole different way. So if you put yourself in their shoes, I think that can be a very good safeguard against sounding like you're begging, whining, or nagging.
Definitely. And I think that's one of the most important things, is whenever you're coming across is always to think about how your message is received and what the other person, what's important to them and how they're going to respond to it. That's a really good point.
I agree. I think it's a little scary how much entitlement nonprofits, especially established nonprofits, seem to get. And I know closed doors with the staff and volunteers, yeah, you're going to say some things that sound brash, and you just need to vent sometimes if you've had a bad experience. But we need to remember that we're never entitled to a donor's money. Just because they've given $10,000 a year for the last 5 years doesn't mean that they owe it to us this coming year. They're the ones earning the money, and it's theirs to do with what they want, and we need to earn it every time. So that's just something that I think if we can take that, get away from that entitlement, because that entitlement really just smells bad, and it reeks if you're in the room with it,
mm-hmm.
And you're the donor. It's not something that's attractive and naturally drawing you to making a gift. It becomes a little repulsive because the fundraiser becomes smug and just knowing it's in the bag anyway.
Definitely, definitely.